I was poking around on YouTube the other day and ended up listening on one of the videos there, obviously, to a young lady address one of the current hot button issues for contemporary society. Now, some of you got it. Well, what issue? Doesn't matter. Pick whichever one matters to you. That one. That happened to be it. Good guess. The thing is that this woman was knowledgeable. She was articulate. She was obviously an intelligent woman who didn't arrive at her conclusions without some amount of reasoned consideration. She was certainly secular in her perspective, but not someone who'd gotten there without choosing to get there, without at least thinking about it significantly along the way. And in the course of her remarks, and this is why what the subject was doesn't matter, but this is the thing that really got my attention. In the course of her remarks, she said about the subject she was discussing, there are some surveys, yes, that show thus and so, and she identified a perspective different than her own. There are some surveys that show thus and so, but they all come from Christian organizations, and we all know that they have an agenda. One simple phrase. We all know they have an agenda, and my YouTube friend managed to completely negate and dismiss everything my life is about. Well, that was easy. And it provoked me to think again about the nature of the age in which we live and how it is exactly that the people of God, everybody say that includes me, are supposed to penetrate this culture, our world, with the good news of Jesus' redemptive love. When who Christians are and what they stand for can be so easily and summarily dismissed, what are the people of God to do about that? Now, hold on to whatever you think is the answer to that question for just a bit. Here's a news flash for you. Are you ready? The world has changed a bit in the last 20, 30, 40 years. This has nothing to do with anything, but I thought that to myself this week, and I thought it's interesting how we frame those kind of statements relative to our age. I used to say the world has changed a bit in the last 20 years. Now I say the world has changed a bit in the last 20, 30, 40 years, 50 years. But if you've got any sense of recent history, it has to be fairly easy for you to recognize how true that is. And the changes are not just in terms of the challenges we face, whatever you might think, you know, about the war on terror or about global warming or about nuclear proliferation or about globalization in the economy or the immigration issue or any of those things. I will grant you that the problems we face as a people seem like problems on a whole new level of difficulty. If this were a video game, you'd have to say, boy, I haven't played this level before. But on a deeper and more significant level, what's changed, at least in the United States of America, what's changed is the basis from which, the perspective from which we choose to attack those problems. What has shifted and eroded is the common Judeo-Christian basis from which we used to, as a nation, consider life and our place in it. Why we exist, how we function best in this world. A biblical basis for decision making is no longer the norm in our culture. It is by no means any longer the common and accepted basis from which most people live their lives. So what's the church to do? I'm trying to set a little bit of a trap for you here, so just be ready, all right? What's the church to do? This nation has lost its footing, and the priorities and convictions of Christian people seem to be disregarded without consequence, while the very things we stand most opposed to seem to sometimes be celebrated before us, be flaunted before us with blatant disregard for what's right and what's best. We're not in Kansas anymore. What's the church to do? Let me continue my lament. Indeed, we're not only disregarded, we're totally misunderstood. We know about you guys, our world tells us. We know about Christians. We know about the Bible Belt. We know about the religious always right. We know about the moral majority. We know who you are. We know what you stand for. We know what your agenda is. Some people are convinced that Christ followers, or at least the preachers among us, are nothing more than charlatans on a quest for money. Others are, I heard a fellow say once, if the money's so good, why aren't you in it? Others are convinced that, you know, we're people who are so wicked as to cover up child molestation rather than deal with it. Others are sure we're merely manipulative strategists on a quest for political power. Others are convinced we're just backwoods hillbillies with no better sense than to believe that ancient stuff. Others are convinced that we are rigid hyper-moralists who only want to impose our rules on everyone else, the most intolerant kind of intolerant people they are. Whatever they think, a good part of our world is already convinced they know what believers in Jesus Christ are all about. They're confident they know our agenda. What's the church to do? We're not only disregarded, we're misunderstood. Everything we stand for is dismissed with a mere, well, those studies all come from Christian organizations and we know their agenda. What's the church to do? I dare to suggest to you this morning that too often the church's response has been to prove the world exactly right about us. Too often the church's response has been to declare our need to organize, our need to unite, our need to show this world our clout, our power, our leverage. We determine to boycott this business or elect that person or expose this fallacy or that injustice or some philosophical or practical shortcoming. We distribute petitions. We initiate legislation. We organize rallies and protests and campaigns, and we determine we're going to fight fire with fire, and we're going to return this nation to its righteous roots. And we forget that the weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. We forget that ultimately our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against rulers, authorities, powers of this dark world, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. And this battle that we are talking about will only be won, and our world will only be transformed by Christ. Ding, 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 ding. Important statement coming up. This battle will only be won by the genuine expression of the love of God through us. Y'all are being good today because we got reporter present, aren't you? God bless you. I did wear a suit jacket this morning. It's killing me. This battle will only be won by the genuine expression of the love of God through us. How do we live in such a sometimes hostile environment? How is it that the church is to be about her Father's business in a world where we are often disregarded and our motives and agenda so often misunderstood? We preach, we shout together, we celebrate who it is God has called us to be and the place that He's given His people in kingdom advance, the privilege to be agents of the transforming grace of God. But how is it that the people of God are to carry out their grand commission to go into all the world and make disciples? How is it that we are to fulfill our call to be the salt of the earth, the light of the world, given our current context? How is it that those things that we have been speaking about in recent weeks, that compelling description of the church from Isaiah 55, the people of God as a people. Remember this, echoing God's invitation and bearing God's influence and seizing God-given opportunities and riding the wave of God's advancing Word. How can those things be in a culture where God's Word and God's people are so easily disregarded and easily dismissed? I'm telling you today that those things will come to pass when we learn to live in, to genuinely show forth, to honestly become to others living expressions of God's unconditional love. I'm frustrated. It ticks me off with the thought that Christianity is associated with an agenda by so many. I'm not blaming them. I'm saying this is what is. I'm saying to some degree we've created it. I'm frustrated with the notion that Christianity is just another of any number of competing perspectives. That it's just one more worldview to be chosen or ignored. Your choice is one possible alternative among many. I'm frustrated that this life-giving relationship we found in Jesus Christ is completely mischaracterized by some as some sort of hidden covering for some of the worst motives and worst living one could imagine, a covering for those who are power-hungry or hate-mongering or intolerant or controlling and abusive. If it is ever any of those things, if it's ever the least of those things, it is not a life or testimony that reflects accurately a living relationship with the resurrected Christ. Nobody ever said about Jesus, "We know His agenda." I say that and I understand that the religious leaders of His day, the scribes and the Pharisees, accused Him of all sorts of things. They accused Him of being in cahoots with the devil. They accused Him of being a glutton and a drunkard. They accused Him of being a friend of sinners. Oh, that the world would accuse the church of being a friend of sinners. The fact is, about Jesus, Mark chapter 12, verse 37 says, the common people heard Him gladly. Pontius Pilate, even while under extreme political pressure to say otherwise, declared plainly, "I find no fault in this man." The thief on the cross with his dying breath declared, "We're punished justly, we're getting what our deeds deserve, but this man has done nothing wrong." Oh, that those kinds of things could be said of the church. How did it happen? What's gone so terribly wrong that the people of God are so often associated with everything but that kind of integrity and focus and testimony? How is it that today's church can reverse the momentum and present Christ and live Christ as He really is? It all boils down to the genuine expression of the love of God through us. It all boils down to what Christ described as the greatest commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. We like that, amen? Don't forget, Jesus said the second is like the first. The second is this: love your neighbor as yourself. There's no commandment greater than these. Love your neighbor. Love your neighbor as yourself. Seems simple to me when I think about it. How many of you enjoy criticism? No, wait a minute. I don't mean giving it. I mean, how many of you enjoy receiving it? Yeah. How many of you have ever been criticized by someone you knew didn't like you anyway? How receptive were you to what they had to say? Not. What part of "I'm not listening" don't you understand? How many of you have ever been criticized by someone who, if you were honest about it, you knew they loved you deeply? You knew they wanted the best for you. How receptive were you to what they had to say? Still not very. I understand. I don't think anybody likes criticism. Nobody likes to hear, "You dummy." Nobody likes to hear, "Have you considered that perhaps the way you're going about this isn't the wisest approach?" One of my favorite statements involves a minister friend and his wife, and one time she said to them in the middle of some animated discussion, "Can I tell you something about yourself, or are you too angry to hear it?" I understand that nobody likes criticism, but how many of you know when you can see someone's heart and you know they are there for you and you know they're on your side, and when they then speak into your life some word of correction or challenge or perspective that you hadn't considered, and when they speak that word from a foundation of love, you are going to at least give it consideration that otherwise you simply wouldn't have. And somehow, I'm convinced this message that the church, the people of God, is privileged to deliver to the world, it must somehow boil down to that again. There is a permeating, invasive power to unconditional love that simply makes it more irresistible than just about anything out there. Love, persistent, undeniable, unconditional love will get a hold of you, my friend. The truth is, I wonder how many of us have actually been loved like that by another human being, but I'm telling you, if you've experienced it, it's just about unstoppable. And when the people of God express the love of God, it slips through the defenses and the objections and the questions and the doubts. And it carries an invitation to the heart of men and women and boys and girls that almost everyone finds simply irresistible. When God's people love people unconditionally, the kingdom sneaks up on folks. Jesus talks a bit about this stealth advance of the kingdom in at least a couple of parables. In Mark chapter 4, he says, "This is what the kingdom of God is like. A man scatters seed on the ground night and day, whether he sleeps or gets up. The seed sprouts and grows, though he does not know how. And all by itself, the soil produces grain. First the stalk, then the head, then the full kernel in the head. And as soon as the grain is ripe, he puts the sickle to it because the harvest has come." All by itself. Night and day, whether he sleeps or gets up, the seed is active. The word is doing its work. What you've planted in someone's heart is slipping past their defenses and introducing them to the love of God and the kingdom of heaven. Again, he said, what shall we say the kingdom of heaven is like? Or what parable shall we use to describe it? It's like a mustard seed, which is the smallest seed you plant in the ground. Yet when planted, it grows. Yet when planted, somebody's got to express some love. Come on, give me a little right now. Stick to your notes, Kent. But yet when planted, it grows and becomes the largest of all garden plants with such big branches that the birds of the air can perch in its shade. It starts so small. Just a seed. Just a greeting. Just a welcome. Just a handshake. Just a friendly hand. Grows into a conversation or a friendship, a relationship. And before you know it, by the grace of God, the undeniable love of Christ has been shown through you to someone who didn't have a clue about God before you came their way or misunderstood who God was and how deeply He loved them. And now, though they may not agree with you politically, or they may not match you economically, or you may operate in different circles socially, but the kingdom at the right time is within reach. God is near. Remember talking about this from Isaiah 55? Ready to have mercy, ready to freely pardon. And it didn't have anything to do with anything except your expression to them of the unconditional love of God. Love God, love your neighbor. Everything hinges on that. All the law and the prophets, Jesus said. This whole kingdom thing boils right down to that. See, I wish I had the chance to meet my YouTube friend. I'd love to be able to show her that Christianity is not about an agenda. I don't want her to know a video. I want her to know me and Christ. I've thought about a video response already. I want her to know some person. I want her to know some person through whom she can get introduced to the unconditional love of Christ. We all know, probably never have that chance, but almost every day I have that chance with others. So do you. Many times the greatest opportunities are with ornery stinkers we can't stand. No, I'm not speaking of your spouse. Because I wouldn't talk about your spouse that way. Every day we have that chance with others, not to be about some agenda that the world can identify, but to be about a kingdom agenda that in almost secretive ways just plants the seed of God's unconditional love where it can take root and grow and someday produce a harvest. The people of God have the chance to say to a broken world full of broken people, not different than us, but just like us, broken apart from the grace of God, God loved the world so much that He gave His one and only Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish but have everlasting life. You see, the truth is, an honest expression of the love of God in the context of a one-to-one relationship, in the context of somebody who knows you and who you know, is not nearly so easily dismissed or misunderstood as all the other commotion the church sometimes creates. I want to boil it down to where it's so simple no one can miss it. I want to be living God's unconditional love towards people so that when the time is right and when they're able to receive it and when they're wanting to know Him, I can tell them, it's not my love, this is God's love. And they'll know me well enough to know it's not a line. I want it to be a defining characteristic of our church that we genuinely express the unconditional love of God. Musicians, come. Some of you who are critical thinkers are saying to yourself, well, Pastor, isn't that an agenda? Loving people so they'll finally come around to your way of thinking? I'm going to love you into the kingdom. You don't know, but I'm working behind the scenes to manipulate this whole thing to show you what a great guy I am so you'll want to know my Jesus. I've done that, or at least tried to. Relational evangelism, we sometimes call it, but that's not what I'm talking about today, because here's the difference. An expression, listen to me, an expression of God's love continues to love just as completely, just as thoroughly, even if that person to whom you're expressing the unconditional love of God never comes around. Even if there's never a change. Even if it seems that all the love expressed has borne no fruit, God never stops loving, so neither can I. Years ago, back in the dark ages when Amy Grant was still singing strictly Christian music, she sang a song based on the parable of the prodigal son. Song sung from the father's perspective as he waits for the return of his son. And the last line of that song, perhaps it still gets my attention today. And even if, the father says, even if he's waiting, he's longing for his son to return, but he knows the possibility is the son may never come home. Even if, the father says, even if you never do return, still I will have learned how to love you better. Say, Pastor, what's the point in that? The point is God is love. It's His nature. He can't change it. The point is, God so loved that He gave. The point is, greater love has no one than this, that He laid down His life for His friends. The point is that that's what it's like to be just like Jesus. Our agenda is to love unconditionally, forgiving aggressively, living unreservedly as a genuine expression of the unconditional love of God. And so, as Paul says it, this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more, more and more, in knowledge and depth of insight, so that you may be able to discern what is best and be pure and blameless until the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. Stand with me, church. I guess I understand the need for the church to be involved, for the people of God to be involved in a lot of things. I understand values voters debates, and I understand petition drives, and I understand rallies. And yet I got to tell you that just my sense is today that a lot of that stuff gets in the way. It misses the point. And maybe there's a place at some point for those kind of activities and those kind of discussions with people and those. But you know what? I just don't see anybody saying about Jesus, well, we know what His agenda is. He's all about... Jesus didn't come to create a political action committee. Jesus came that you might have life and have it more abundantly. Jesus came not to be served, but to serve and to lay down His life as a ransom for many. So the church of God, the people of God, you and me, you and I, you and me... That's our agenda. That's our agenda. It's not even, you know this, it's not about building buildings and developing ministries and, you know, whatever. It's about loving people. Love God, love people. Especially those you can't stand. Keep on loving. Well, I've been loving. And that on me stinkers the same way it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Well, God's still loving him, so you can still love him. Even your pastor, you could still love him. 18 years in, that guy's no different than he was the day he came. Love him anyway. It'll do you good. I'm here looking for people who are ready to be vessels of the unconditional love of God. To embrace that as their agenda. To be so genuine, transparent, available, connected, so that when somebody's inclined to say, we know those people's agenda, we know what they think, we know what they're about, something in their head goes off and they say, wait a minute, I know so and so, he knows Christ, and that doesn't seem to be his agenda. To upset the equilibrium enough that somebody who would otherwise be inclined to say, I know what that's all about and I don't need anything to do with it, would somehow now say, I'm going to think about that. I'm going to check that out. Your love, O Lord, reaches to the heavens. Yes, your faithfulness stretches to the sky.